It's got to be a totally pleasurable thing to enjoy the absolute solace of your own company and not get bored or go mad, and to be out amongst so many beautiful stars, all alone, with absolutely no one to hear you for miles and miles and... What the...
Hello? Could I get some more water, please?
Sorry, what? Who are you?
Just for the windows.
Windows?
Yeah, I've got most of this top side done, but I'm running out. And have you got a kettle? Because I could so do with a cup.
Sure, but where did you...
Open this window up, then. Let me in. It's a bit nippy out here.
Okay, wait while I depressurize the room and find the window key.
These your Jurassic Park pajamas. Sorry. I knocked them into your cheese fondue set and press that button. That's now flashing red. I'm sure it's not important.
let's hope not. Well, welcome to my ship. And
is this your kettle?
Yes. And to cut to the cheese, Chase. What are you doing up here?
It's Patreon, of course. Yeah, gotta make the money back somehow, huh? So, I'm just off to do Wolf359's dirty viewing platforms next. Bit of hard graft, hoping to catch an Eiffel of, what's his name?
Eiffel?
Eiffel, yes. Back to current business. You've got a lot of windows here on the Cavatica, so that's by my calculations. You owe me... 469,000 pounds, please.
Oh, that much? Really?
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's taken me ages.
The windows. I didn't ask you to do them, but I can't let you do all that work for nothing.
No. They'd do that, eh? Working hard for nothing, for no money, just for the love of something. Fools.
Hello, and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. She's Sarah Golding.
And she's Sarah Ria Werner of the Amazing Girl in Space podcast, and right now, Forbes contributor, ghostwriter, and fresh back from PodCon Seattle 2017. Sarah, hello, welcome.
Well, thank you, and welcome to you, I guess, as well.
Thank you.
It's weird welcoming you to your own show, but yes.
And before we go any further, we need to say huge thanks to Audioblogs for sponsoring this show. Go and look on their website for some amazing sound effects, music loops, and music to enhance your fabulous shows. So, Sarah, though it's very cool to speak to you, though, you've had obviously quite a few fantastic adventures this year, especially with your writing and the appearance of this beautifully exciting podcast that you've written in audio drama format. And this weekend I've gone to catch up with lots of audio drama people. So tell us first, give us the dirt on PodCon. Who was naughty, crazy, drunk out of no? Who was it amazing to speak to? Who did you catch up with?
Everyone was amazing to speak to. The weird thing about, so I'm relatively new to the audio drama community. And so before PodCon, I'd never met anyone in person before. Mm-hmm. And so to sort of transfer a sort of digital knowledge and a very shallow relationship with folks into a much richer personal relationship was just magical and wonderful. Yes. This community is incredible. I don't even have words. It's so incredible everyone is just amazing. So it was very, very cool and exciting to meet folks.
Superb. And what kind of things did you get to do? What kind of events were there that you thought were fantastic to get involved in?
Oh, gosh. Well, there were, of course, panels, mm-hmm. and the panels all looked wonderful, but I was so busy talking to people and meeting up with people that I ended up not going to very many of the actual panels that I was supposed to go to. I attended the Lore live performance, which was lovely, mm-hmm. but for the most part, I wandered around and met people and hugged people, and it was this beautiful coming together of all of these different audio dramas. I've been to other podcasting conventions, other conventions before, and this is the first one that I saw. There was a really heavy audio drama presence. Like, we really represented.
Hooray.
It was really, really cool.
Good job.
I saw a lot of vendors there from, you know, Spreaker and Blueberry who are like, oh, audio drama is kind of a thing. And so it was just really refreshing to see representation there. And there was also, again, something I'm not used to, a lot of fans there. There were people cosplaying as characters from their favorite shows. It was just a beautiful thing. I met Lauren Shippen, who is just absolutely beautiful, warm, welcoming. Eli from the Far Meridian, whom I had held as this like podcasting hero of mine, was just a sweetheart, just so sweet. It was like coming home to a family that you actually like.
So for next year, from your opinion, what do you think they need to do to accommodate all these wonderful, aspiring and inspirational audio drama people? What events need to happen to more people to flock?
Oh, man. I think it depends on what you'd like to see in the audio drama community. If you'd like to see more new people starting audio dramas, if you would like to see the current community enriched with education, I would love to see. And I think there's a need for a couple things. For people like me who are doing everything, maybe a little bit of a look at how to balance everything. You know, some of us do our own writing, directing, acting, producing, marketing, all of that stuff. So I would love to see just something about how to handle that. I would love to see even just marketing a podcast in general. That's something I get a lot of questions about is, you know, how do you get your show noticed? How do you get it out there? And it's because a lot of people in audio drama come from writing or theater or production, and they don't have the sort of business side, the marketing side of things. So I think that that could be very, very valuable as well.
Yes.
And maybe even also for people like me, some just very rudimentary voice acting to kind of cover any gaps that we might be missing. I know they had a voice acting workshop this year, but I didn't get to go. So that's really just my fault.
Too busy having too much fun. Sounds amazing.
Yeah, well, yeah. Talking to too many wonderful people. I mean, like, how about you? Is there anything that you think that folks would benefit from?
Well, I do think, yeah, this sort of startup package of how-tos is definitely something that I get asked a lot. You know, how do I market something? How do I host it on this site and this site? What's the difference between hosting it in Libsyn, Blueberry, and so on? And I think it's sort of ease of access to just methods of doing things. So things like editing as well, people have spoken to me about. And obviously there's a plethora of doors, there's a plethora of ways of putting something together. And it's just people not necessarily, you know, want a handhold, but just ways in really to different ways of approaching editing and mastering and all of those elements as well, sort of perhaps a deeper techie kind of thing where everyone can have a computer in front of them and everyone can have a go, I think would be really kind of beneficial. But yeah, voice acting, I definitely would love to go and play in a room and see with some people, you know, what happens by changing the moods and tones and also just talking perhaps, you know, about those dealing with, as a director, dealing with your remote actors and dealing with your people in the room and how as a director you can, you know, give as much as your voice actors might need to give you the performance of the whole that you are after. Exciting.
Oh my gosh, yes. So pretty much everything. Please. I would like to see everything about audio drama covered.
Amazing.
Love it.
And so you're on a panel next year, yeah? That'd be awesome.
I would love it. Yes.
Make it so. Yes. Cool. And this podcast specifically is about home record setups. And obviously doing your podcasts, you have some kind of exciting setup. So can you just talk us through currently the phases of your tech, how you started, and if you've added to that over time, why?
Yes.
So what was your startup kit for podcasting?
My startup kit. Yes. Oh, man. And it hasn't changed a lot. I've only changed one or two things since I initially started. So I started back in 2014, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I had a borrowed microphone. It was a Blue Snowball, which I think was a great starter mic because I didn't have to learn a mixer or anything like that. It was just plug it into my laptop. So I had my Blue Snowball, which I borrowed. I had my laptop. I had I went to Guitar Center just here in town and asked if they sold audio foam. They said no, but I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but like the guy was like, here, let me go check and see if I can hook you up. So I went into the back and he ripped a big panel of audio foam off the wall of their like recording thing. And he's like, how about this? Wow. $30. And I was like, yes, please. And so I don't know. It's maybe like 2 by 4 feet and it like curls in a semicircle. And so I balance that on top of my desk. I have towels down to absorb any extra sound. And I had my blue snowball. Yes, like I had towels everywhere. I know that comforters also work very well. Yeah, and basically it was that. It was a glass of water, a tube of chapstick, and my computer. And that was how I recorded my first – probably my first 8 or 9 episodes. And then finally, when I realized how much I loved podcasting, this was for my first podcast Right Now, which is nonfiction and not the complex audio drama type. But I decided to buy my own mic. I decided to invest. And so I bought a Blue Yeti. And that is the microphone that I still use today to record Girl in Space. And everything else is the same.
That's very cool. And why did you choose the Yeti? What drew you to that? And did you research it deeply? Did you ask other people or just something that you found resonated with your tones?
I did. I researched. So I came into this blind. I got into podcasting as a writer and somebody who liked to talk. And so I didn't know anything about production. I didn't know anything about gain or levels or anything like that. And so I chose the Snowball initially because it was free because I was borrowing it. It was easy to use, so it was just plug and play because it's a USB mic. It just kind of, it sounded okay, and I found that I could adjust any things I didn't like in post-production. So I could sort of get rid of anything I didn't like later on. But I researched. I was like, okay, do I need a condenser, a dynamic mic, and what are the pros and cons to that? Do I want to spend, you know, $460 on the Heil PR40? And at the end, I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to use what I have and make the best show that I can with what I have. So, yeah. So that's why I've kind of kept the same setup that I've had since 2014.
Cool. And how do you then edit? What have you chosen for your door of choice?
And I don't know if this is necessarily choice or if it's just because I, like many podcasters, don't have a huge budget for podcasting, but I just use Audacity because it's free. So that's, I sort of jumped in. I watched some YouTube videos on how to use Audacity and I started playing around with what was possible. And I still use that to this day as well.
So yeah, I do love Audacity because it has been my first way into editing various pieces and I'm getting a lot more confident with the aspects of it and experimenting with a few more elements of it. But I have found it to be quite frustrating at times. So I'm kind of trying to move over to using Reaper, but it's that kind of astride both things where I know Audacity so well, everything's so much quicker to do. Whereas Reaper is dark and it's black and it's I know you can change colours, I'm sure, but it's a bit more like Darth Vader to being with Obi-Wan, you know? It's like,
yes.
I'm quite happy with this nice, happy one, but I know really I should go to the dark side. So it's something that I'm working through. But and with regards to sort of outputs and add-ons and things, have you had to invest in any other little fun gadgets and things to go along with what you're working on?
You know what? I'm the worst. I'm going to say no, I haven't. Like, everything I use is so basic just because, I don't know, if you give me an inch, I'll take a mile. And so if I even know that there's other little gadgets available, I will like research them and spend all my time and all my money researching and buying them and using them and learning how to use them. And it's like, no, I have what I need. And so I keep just moving forward. Although I liked what you said about Reaper because at PodCon this weekend, everyone was like, Sarah, you need to get away from Audacity. You know, you need to be using Reaper.
Oh, there you go.
So it's funny that you said that. But no, it's just I have everything so basic.
And that, I guess at the minute perhaps having the show that you have with so many, how many actors are currently working with you on Girl in Space?
Oh, gosh. I want to say 7 or 8. And
so it's expanding, isn't it? It's becoming a bit more exciting and more complicated. So, yeah, I think that's the thing. And because, as I say, Audacity is kind of bitten me in various naughty places several times. I just
yes.
I think that's why I'm jumping away. But not to say that as a starter and as And people like Julie Hoverson, who are amazing, still do use it. So, you know, it is something that people can stick to. But, yeah, I just feel like I want to move on and be able to do other things and experiment. And with regards to editing your podcast, so where do you get your music and sound effects and all those kind of things from?
So I met so many people at PodCon, and I asked about this because, you know, I essentially have no idea what I'm doing.
Nobody does. That's what's wonderful.
And I asked, like, where do you get your sound effects? Well, and everybody either purchases them or makes their own. And I'm like, oh, you know, I didn't even know that was, like, legal that, you know, oh, I can just record my own sounds. It sounds really stupid. But, you know, going in, you're like, I don't know what I can and can't do. I don't know what the rules are. So when I started, sort of in line with my whole, like, very minimalist, basic budget kind of thing, I was like, you know what? I'm going to limit myself to anything that's, like, public domain and free. And so I've made Girl in Space using all public domain sounds, all Creative Commons. A few of them here and there have sort of the attribution, which I do in the credits for the show. But otherwise, I've just sort of limited myself to anything I can make or anything I can get for free. I use freesound.org a lot. If you use that, do make sure that you are attributing things properly. I got my theme song from the YouTube audio library. And let's see, other things. Often there's some very cool sound companies out there that will send out every once in a while a free bundle of sounds. And I will download those and use those. But yeah, everything I've used has been either free or cobbled together by myself.
But that's what is even more exciting, because you've produced such fantastic shows.
Well, thank you.
And when you're out roving, because you do your Right Now podcast, where you speak to various amazing people in different parts and genres of writing, what equipment do you use then? Is it exactly
the same? I just throw in Skype and Ecamm call recorder for those, which I don't know if I would necessarily recommend Skype. As you and I discovered earlier, it's touchy and it crashes a lot. But so I'm kind of waiting for like the magic silver bullet of, you know, conversational audio recording to come along. But I don't know if it will. But yeah, I just add in Skype for the conversation and Ecamm call recorder.
Yeah, cool. Because you'd think they'd have thought of something amazing by now.
Yes.
Surely the world is so connected. Why can't we just talk very easily and clearly and hear each other like we are in the next room?
Amen.
I don't understand
either. It's so frustrating.
But yeah, I use Piezo, P-I-E-Z-O, for my recording of Skype calls, which has become a necessity just because some of the people I speak to don't or aren't able to record on their end. And I found that to be okay. There are some glitches and things that have happened with it, but mainly because of my inadequacies of using it and just gleaning the basic setup of things as well. So that's something worth having a look at. And I know, for example, Kareem Cromfley has sung the praises of Voice Meet as well quite a lot for using. And for bigger, and I know I've spoken a little bit about this, for bigger casts of people online at the same time, I've used Source Connect Now, which basically I think can have up to 6 or 8 people on at the same time. And you still record your own end, but it can be recorded into that program if you don't find the only bug in the program, which I have managed to do. So, so yes, so Source Connect Now, it is definitely worth having a look at if you want to get, you know, lots of casts together to record.
I'm going to have to check that out.
Have a little look. It's quite good. And I think, as I say, it has worked generally well. And obviously, it's very exciting as mainly a remote actor to be actually speaking to the person you're meant to be talking to in the script. And I can't remember who I was doing that with the other day. Oh, it was David Ault. And we were doing some Hostile Worlds. And we managed to actually do it live together. And it was quite strange because both of us are mainly remote actors. And we both admitted to kind of forgetting what to do. Because you're kind of used to doing these lines 3 times in a row, perhaps, or more, and having experiments. So then to have it as a conversation again, it kind of is a different mindset to get in. It's quite interesting. And I did then do it afterwards with the 3 lines as well. And I don't know what's better. So it's quite interesting. Maybe I've lost the art of being able to do things live. I don't know.
No.
But we also have some input today from some amazing people who've given up their time to tell us about their home setups. So Steve Blizzen of the Drift and Ramble podcast, Regan Adler of the Amazing Oak podcast, Tanya Malolyevich of Pretty Much Everything, and more. I'm sure she'll be in your podcast at some point. Kevin Hartnell of Amazing Composition Fame. He does music for Campfire Radio and just all sorts of amazing music. And Boy Barrett of Roswell, BC, have all taken the time to tell you what kit they're using and why they choose it. So have a good listen to these folks.
Hey there, I'm Steve Blizzen. I'm executive producer for the Drift and Ramble podcast and sound designer for Creepy. Here's 1,000 words on my recording setup. Let's start with my recording space. I have 2 areas in my house dedicated to audio production. I define them as Studio A, which is downstairs and my primary recording space, and Studio B, which is upstairs where I do all my post-production work. I live in a 3-story townhouse with neighbors on either side, so outside noise is a constant problem. My current recording area is a Whisper Room Series 2000 model MD8484, which is basically a 7-foot by 7-foot square booth, big enough to get a couple of people inside or play an instrument comfortably. Prior to that, everything I recorded was in a closed-filled closet in my bedroom that's about the same size. Inside the booth, I run a Sennheiser 416 shotgun mic as my primary voiceover mic. I also own a Neumann TLM-49 and a CAD E100S as my secondary mics. For voiceover, the CAD E100S is a great choice for someone on a tight budget. I got mine through MassDrop.com for about $150 less than what its current price is on Amazon. I run Logic Pro X as my primary DAW, and my current interface is either a Focusrite 2i2 or 2i4, depending on where I am in the house. But later today, I'll be testing a ProSonus Quantum 2 Thunderbolt interface, and I'm pretty excited about that. I chose the Sennheiser 416 microphone after recording with the Neumann TLM-49 for a couple of years and getting tired of the constant interruptions any large diaphragm condenser will bring in a poorly treated recording space. I mean, I love to hear birds chirping outside, but not in my recordings. The Sennheiser 416 does 2 things very well for me. It complements my voice, and it rejects a lot of ambient noise by virtue of its supercardioid pickup pattern. Your mileage may vary. In a properly treated space, the Neumann holds its own. It's a very solid VO mic that can capture subtle, nuanced voice acting. It captures everything, so if my neighbor decides to beat his dog, fire up his lawnmower, or start his 1972 Pinto that's been sitting up on cinder blocks in his driveway for the past 19 years, the Neumann will print all that into the mix. The Sennheiser 416 will not. It only gets what you point it at, and it rejects much of the rest. It was designed to be used for capturing dialogue for film and television, and it's often the mic you see when a sound guy is holding up a mic on a pole. The 416 also resists moisture, which is now a critical concern in the booth on hot days. A word about booths. No matter how much you think you want, need, must have a booth, do not rush into this purchase. There are many considerations that we just don't have time to cover in this segment. One of the unexpected lessons I learned over the years is less is more. I started out with all kinds of outboard gear, and almost every piece of it became a disappointment either right after unboxing it or only a year or two out of service. By eliminating all of my outboard gear like mixers, processors, preamps, and whatnot, I reduced the tangle of extension cords in my work area, making it a little safer, and I also reduced the opportunities for ground loop hum, cable issues, odd, glitchy, unexplainable noises, and the less gear I owned, the fewer problems I had, while my quality went up. I'm not against hardware. I'm just against buying into the misguided belief that equipment will change your environment. If you educate yourself on how to make the best of what you have, you may be surprised by the results. Know how to use what you have and research everything before you plan to buy it. My very first digital audio recording setup was based on Windows 3.11, and I was one of the very first people I knew to commit to a fully digital recording rig. It didn't take long for me to learn to hate Windows. Every update would cripple my sound card and render my drivers useless. Sometimes I'd have to wait weeks before I could record again while Microsoft and manufacturers got things sorted. That's not cool if you're trying to run an audio production business. It was a terrible idea, and it ended up costing me nearly 3 times what I would have paid for a real computer. It also cost me a friendship and many long hours of panic, worry, and stress. After that experience, I switched everything over to Mac, and I have never regretted that decision. My Focusrite sound cards run native on Macs, and there are never any driver issues to worry about, and you can even drive them from an iPad if you have the notion. I record everything into Logic Pro because, first and foremost, it's what I know. It's powerful, full-featured, robust. I can create, compose, arrange, and rearrange music and spooky soundscapes the way I want to, and never feel encumbered by the program itself. Logic is also incredibly cost-efficient, too. For me, it's a great choice. Again, your mileage may vary. I'm happy to continue the conversation individually with you about gear if you want to talk. You can reach me at driftandramble@gmail.com. That's driftandramble, all one word, @gmail.com. And just a quick note to say thank you to all of the people here in the audio drama production podcast community. You've been a great source of support. Sarah's been amazing. All of you have been amazing. And it's really an honor to be amongst all of you great folks. And the energy and positivity that you're putting forth has been just tremendously supportive and fantastic. And I'm just rambling on here. One last thing I will say. Support the Audio Drama Production Podcast at their Patreon page. Get in there, drop a few bucks in the till, and have a great day. Thanks. Thanks for having me on, Sarah.
Hi, this is Reagan Adler, take two. I actually accidentally deleted my first attempt. So I'm recording right now in my recording studio. You can't see it, but I'm using air quotes when I say recording studio because I record in... it's not a walk-in closet. It's like a, you can't even put your winter coats in without them, you know, sort of coming out of it. So I shoved the winter coats to either side and I put not even a desk, it's like a TV tray. And I have a little rack that raises up my audio interface. My mic is set up on it's like a spring scissor arm. And I attached that to a shelf at the top of the closet, and so it hangs down. I have a pop filter with that. I have an athletic sock double folded over the mic to help a little bit with sibilance and popping. I use thumbtacks, and I put some acoustic foam or soundproofing panels, literally just like 4 of them, on the back of the wall of the closet that I'm using. And I put my MacBook Air on the TV tray, and I plug it into my Focusrite Scarlett 2i2. I got a bundle which comes with headphones, cords, all the cords you need, a microphone, which is actually, I'll talk about this in a second, but it's one of the better mics I've used for a very sibilant, higher pitched voice. And it's really pretty. Like, it's all red and matchy. It's great. So I have had all sorts of technical problems. And for the purpose of this segment, I'm not even going to get into, like, the Tascam recorder that broke the very first time I tried to use it, and the microphone that came to me literally in pieces. It's been an adventure, and sadly, we'd be here for like 30 minutes if I went into detail about every single piece of gear that's ever failed on me or arrived broken or just not sounded good with my voice. I originally lost my brand new MacBook Air. I tripped over my cat holding a glass of wine, and it fell into the keyboard. There was no saving it. After that, I bought a really beat-up MacBook Pro just because I had to get the work done, and all my stuff was on Mac, and it was just easier, and so... I was super beat up and started falling apart within maybe 2 weeks. I made it work until I could afford to get a slightly upgraded used MacBook Air from it's like 2013. But it has great specs. It's an i7 processor. It has 500-ish gigabytes of SSD hard drive space, 8 gigs of RAM, I think. So pretty good specs. It's held up. it doesn't run like it's a five-year-old computer. You know, it holds up pretty well to all my tasks. The fan rarely kicks on. My only complaint is the battery life because I got it refurbished or used. I don't know. I don't remember at this point. But it works. It works great. And now that I said that, I got to spit on my laptop or something. It's a Jewish thing. So my very first setup was a Blue Yeti mic. I bought it, plugged it in, returned it. It was like $80 on sale, and it did not sound good. It had a lot of hissing and background humming. If you're going to spend $80 on something, you would expect it to sound better than your Apple headphone mic. Ultimately, I knew I needed to upgrade a little bit because originally I was going to direct a big ensemble podcast, but I realized I was going to be making Oak Podcast as a prequel to that. I tried to purchase a PreSonus audio box USB, I think it's called, and true to Reagan luck, the first one never showed up. I got a second one finally, and it just refused to be recognized by my Mac. Misha Stanton was selling their, I think it was a 6i6 second gen, so I ended up buying that from them, and it worked great, but only on some outlets. And that's how I ended up downgrading to what I currently have, which is a first generation Focusrite Scarlett 2i2. Again, I'm really happy with it. It doesn't plug into the wall, so unless you're recording with it on your iPhone and trying to draw power from your iPhone to do that, which I don't do, I use my Snowball when I'm out recording ambient noise. Unless you're doing that, it's for me, it's just better because I don't have to worry about, is my outlet properly grounded? Why is it not working even though it says it's grounded? I've been through so many microphones, it would take up way too much of the time to talk about them. Suffice it to say, I tried several large condenser mics, and I ended up at some point with a dynamic mic. The problem with dynamic microphones is that you really need a gain booster, like a cloud lifter or something in that range. And I got one that was, custom handmade, and it just died. And I honestly, even at its best, it did not sound great on my voice. For a higher pitch voice, you lose so much of the upper range with dynamic mics, no matter how good a mic it is. I ended up really enjoying the smaller diaphragm condenser mics. The microphone I'm using now, which is just the Scarlett CM25, I think it's a rebranded cheap MXL mic. It's somewhere in the $20 to $40 range used on eBay. And it's a medium diaphragm condenser mic. It's very forgiving of most of the problems I think a lot of voiceover artists have. We have like a really busy road on one side of us, and literally the interstate is right behind our backyard. So I minimally treated this room, and the mic, like I said, is really, really forgiving of everything. But I am going to play a couple of clips of different microphones I've tried for you. And so you can jump forward and back and compare them if you'd like to get a feel for sibilance and higher pitched voices and how they sound. So without further ado. All right. Hi, this is Reagan. I'm testing out the Shure SM58 dynamic mic. I think the AC is on. I'm not positive about that. Basically, you can hear the sound quality is pretty good if you're doing like a nonfiction podcast. It's very much like a radio broadcast quality. It's definitely not bad. It could be a lot worse. So hopefully that's a pretty good overview of this. I'm just going to run some tests real quick. So she sells seashells by the seashore. All right. So this is the Shure SM87A small condenser microphone. It is a little bit hotter than the other mic. I won't do a lot of editing because I think it's important to hear like unedited microphone checks, but I will make sure they're the same volume so this doesn't bust your eardrums open. She sells seashells by the seashore. I'm going to give you some room tone. I'm testing out the Blue Snowball, not the Ice, but the more expensive one. They're both pretty cheap. It is a large diaphragm condenser microphone, but the USB setting means there's a little more of a noise floor. There's some electronic hum from it. I mostly plan to use this plugged into my iPhone, actually, to record ambient noise. One one major downside of this microphone is that you can't plug in headphones anywhere that I'm aware of. Might be a deal breaker, might not for you. Right. So, right, let's just do a quick sibilance test. Testing sibilance. Testing whistling S's. She sells seashells by the seashore. This is a mic test of the BlueSpark Digital, which is a USB large diaphragm condenser microphone. Testing sibilance, whistling S's, 1, 2, 3. She sells seashells by the seashore. This is a mic test of the Vimota Boom Pro headset mic, which is a 3.5 millimeter plug-in mic. So this is a little bit different than most other mics, but it can be great in a pinch. Note that I cannot actually hear myself, so that is a downside. So that's something to keep in mind. All right, testing sibilance. She sells seashells by the seashore. And this is the Scarlett CM25 again, the mic I was using earlier to record, and my primary microphone, just the one that came with the Scarlett 2i2 Studio Bundle. All right, a quick sibilance test. She sells seashells by the seashore. And some room tone. So thanks for listening. And thank you, Sarah, for inviting me to talk about my many trials and mishaps in finding a setup that halfway works for me.
Hi, everyone. This is Kevin Hartnell from Campfire Radio Theater. On Campfire Radio Theater, I'm a composer for the show, but I also do the occasional bit of sound design, production, or acting if needed. I'm speaking to you from inside a 6-foot by 12-foot concrete bunker. That's wall-to-wall, floor-to-ceiling concrete. And fortunately, there's a door. That helps. What I did was I put up 2-inch rigid foam board insulation on the walls. I framed up the room with 2x4s. And then I put Roxol Safe and Sound stone wool insulation bats between for absorption. Then I covered it all with a nice acoustically friendly fabric. Since it's a basement, the floor is dry core subflooring with a laminate wood flooring on top of that. You have to be concerned with condensation or moisture underneath, so that's why I have the subfloor. The amount of time I spent is not known, really, because I was just carving out bits of free time here and there scattered over the months. Budget-wise, I estimate it roughly around $1,500 to $2,000. And if you don't have that kind of budget, I understand you could always try making some 2x4 acoustic panels using furring strips and Safe and Sound insulation. You wrap them in fabric, maybe $20, $25 each. And keep in mind that proper placement and quantity can make a difference as well. So, now, I was intimidated by the project initially before I started, and it was one of those things where I consulted John Sayers' recording studio design forum, and I talked to friends of mine that are in the recording industry, and after some reassuring and some tips and suggestions, I decided to give it a shot. We were remodeling the basement anyway, and this was my opportunity to carve out a couple of spaces that I could use for recording music and other things as well. I also have a 12-foot by 17-foot live room for tracking drums and other instruments. As far as what I would do differently, that would all come down to budget, because more money, more options, I believe. And in this case, it turned out pretty well. I figured, hey, worst case scenario is it's better than the basement I had before that sounded terrible. And best case scenario is I have something that sounds pretty good and I can utilize it to create whatever I need to. The equipment I use to record with, I have various microphones for different applications, but for voice, I'm using an Audio-Technica AT4033A microphone. It's a nice condenser microphone. I believe they're around $400 or so. And that's running into an M-Audio Profire 2626 interface. I also have a Behringer ADA 8000 as well. This runs into Pro Tools 10. I have an EQ, a gate, and a compressor on the microphone currently. You may also wonder what it sounds like without the EQ, gate, and compressor. This is what it sounds like. And if you're listening closely, you can hear a computer running in the background. And I need to make a revision on the space so that I can actually place the computer outside of the dead booth. As a compromise, I can use my Zoom H6 to record in the space. I can switch off all the other electronics and record in here with that. Sounds pretty good. Now, for comparison, this is what the basement sounds like in an untreated space. It's very reverberant and noisy. I'm pretty happy with how it all turned out in the end. It's something that I always wanted, and it really wasn't that hard to put together. This is Kevin Hartnell from Campfire Radio Theater signing off.
Hi, my name is Tanya Milevich, and today I'm going to talk to you guys about home recording setups. So to start out with, I in total think I spent about $5,000, if not more. So let's estimate maybe $5,500. In my opinion, what's important for a great recording space and equipment is definitely having a microphone that's dynamic. So you want to make sure that if you move around a little bit, the mic is still going to pick you up. And then if it has a sweet spot like the Rode NT1 does, that you're staying in that spot and you know where that is. You've experimented enough so you understand your mic. Hi, everybody. This is my Bluebird microphone. As you can see, it's pretty sensitive. So gotta be careful of mouth noise because everything gets picked up. Now I'm going to switch to my Rode NT1. Hi, this is my Rode NT1 microphone. It has a sweet spot, so I can't really move around too much with it. If I move over here, and then I'm back in the center, and I move to the left, now I'm back in the center. So you can't really turn your head too much. You can't back up a huge amount, or you get some weird, you know, sound effects. So you have to stay directly in front of the mic. I did notice it makes my voice a little bit bassier, so, you know, maybe I can say websites with more authority now. www.lightningbolt.podbean.com. Or maybe that was a little too exaggerated. You never know. But hey, who knows? Maybe I'll get more military roles with this mic. Anyway, next up is the Shure KSM-32 microphone. Hi, everybody. This is my Shure KSM-32 microphone. And I'm using, again, the same pop filter I was. There's also that 15 dB cut switch. So if I turn that on, I'll be able to yell and I won't have to adjust my gain. Here it is. So I turn that down. Hello! And I turn it back up. So if I go on this side of the mic, you know, there's the center, and then the left side, and if I back up, you can see that this also, you can't move around a huge amount. So the nice thing about my Bluebird mic is like, yeah, you have to stay in front of it, but, you know, you have more freedom of movement. This one does sound pretty good, though. I do have a Stedman pop filter that I plan to use with this mic. Here it is without the pop filter. And I'm being really careful not to pop this because nobody likes plosives, right? All right, everybody, back to my Bluebird. Thank you so much for listening. If any of you have feedback on which three microphones, the Shure KSM-32, the Bluebird microphone, or the Rode NT1 you prefer, please let us know. In my opinion, what's important for a great recording space is well-treated space inside and out. And by that, I mean having foam on your walls, a wonderful preamp, something like a Solo 212. You want to have reliable recording software, something like SoundForge or Goldwave, monitoring headphones so that when you're recording, you can play it back later and determine if it sounds good. So for me, I use the Audio-Technica M50X headphones. The microphones that I use for projects. My main one is my Bluebird microphone, which I started using 8 years ago. It's a great microphone. It's got a great range. You definitely can get a lot of use out of it for years. It's well balanced. It's pretty sensitive. So if you don't have a setup that is blocking out most of the background noise, keep it in mind that it will pick up a lot of things in the background. And if you bump it, you will definitely hear it. I also have a Rode NT1 and a Shure KSM-32 microphone. Those are all wonderful. The Shure KSM-32 literally came in the mail the other day, so I can't wait to try it. And the Rode NT1, as I was saying before, has a sweet spot, so I can't move around too much with it. But I do like it because it really works well with my voice, which is medium to high. It brings out the bright quality in the voice. whereas the Bluebird is more general. It can be used for instruments and vocals. My recording area consists of a vocal booth, which is 4 by 4 feet from QC Acoustics. And it is completely enclosed. It has a door, and I've placed foam on the ceiling, walls, door. But I do have bass traps in the bottom corners and the top corners. The booth blocks out about 68 decibels of noise, which is a lot. It helps with any airplane noise from outside, and I've had several issues in the past with airplanes flying overhead, cars slamming, children, because I live in the middle of a city in an industrial area. So the walls are pretty thick as well, and they have insulation in them. I have a shelf that I have my keyboard, my monitor, and my microphone on, and then a nice computer chair that I got off of Amazon. It's a low-back chair, mesh back. It took us a couple of weeks to put up this booth. I had the assistance of my mom's boyfriend and my cousin, and they both do construction, so I was very lucky. They watched the assembling video that came with the shipment, which was sent via freight shipping. They did have to modify the fans a little bit that came with the booth, the ventilation system. It didn't fit quite right, and it wasn't ventilating properly. I got the kit from the company QC Acoustics, and that's customvocalbooth.com. They did get back to me, and they said they would FedEx my missing parts, my shelf, doorknob, interior lighting, but they never did quite get to it. And I contacted them several times, but I never heard back. So I just kind of moved on, figured it out myself. Luckily, my mom's boyfriend was able to build a shelf for me and help me mount the foam, which we had to use some Gorilla Glue to stick the adhesive onto the foam because it wouldn't stay any other way. And then we had to stick it to the walls and the door. And with the bass traps, we had to take wires and run them across the bass traps to stay in one place. I had issues with radio frequency interference, and that's partly because I have headphones with a coiled cord. My wiring has radio frequency interference coming through it strongly. So I tried buying a grounding cable on Amazon, which did nothing. I got ferrite magnetic chokers for the ends of the cords. And unfortunately, I found out after I bought them that not only did they not work, but the Amazon seller that I had used, which was a third-party seller, was mysteriously not selling this product anymore. It was permanently out of stock. I ended up going to a website, DJ Tech Tools, and I live chatted with them about the problem. They ended up recommending some USB cables that are shielded, and that actually makes a huge difference. I also purchased my Audio-Technica M50X headphones with shielded cables, and those completely cut the interference out. I also made the mistake of, with my monitor in my booth when I record, there's a lot of reflection noise off the monitor itself because it's flat and it's pretty big. So what I've had to do is put a pillow in front of my monitor. With the RFI interference, another thing that you can do is get something called an AC line, and it's a surge protector. Or they have something else called a UPS, which is a little more expensive. It cuts out any line noise, any loops, any RFI interference. Worst comes to worst, that's going to be my last resort. That is the last thing that I'm spending money on. If I had more money and more resources, one thing that I would do is get a 3D binaural microphone, and I would record way more on-location audio dramas. That's a goal of mine. I would love to get more people together. You know, it's the holiday season now, so here's what I'd like to do theoretically, right? Make a ton of spiced wine, you know, mulled wine. Just get a nice holiday party going, get to it, and record some awesome theater for the mind, right? I'd also love to take some more voiceover classes down the line, working my way through the voiceover blueprint class by Bill DeWeese now. I'm looking to expand my career, get better at this, and, you know, just keep trucking away. But regardless of where that turns out, I am going to voice act until I die, for sure. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to my two cents. I had a blast recording this. Thank you so much, Sarah, for having me on the show, as always. I love this. Cheers to the Audio Drama Production Podcast from Lightning Bolt Theater of the Mind. Happy holidays, everyone.
Hi, this is Boyd Barrett. I was a... a complete audio drama novice when I first started producing Roswell, B.C. Now, I've always been a storyteller, whether it was through acting on stage, writing and performing songs, writing stage plays, writing screenplays, or just simply standing up and telling a story with nothing but the words. So, when I saw that audio drama was getting popular, I thought, why not? Why not me? So, for the first season of Roswell, B.C., I produced it with a USB blue snowball because I could gather the actors around it. Now, I can't thank the listeners enough for hanging in there that first season, because the overall sound quality just wasn't anywhere near what many others were doing that I was hearing. But it does show that if you create a story with interesting characters, people sometimes will overlook some technical faults. Now, by the time the second season rolled around, I had moved my real estate appraisal shop to an office with a back room that's about 5 feet by 9 feet, just right, I thought, for a little studio. I bought about 100 12-inch by 12-inch by 2-inch red and charcoal foam acoustic panels and treated most of the walls and the ceilings. I got a Focusrite Scarlett audio interface with 4 mic preamps, a Bluebird cardioid condenser mic by Blue, 2 MXL V67GS large diaphragm condenser mics with, of course, all the cords and the cables and the monitors, etc. I started out with a glass window between the outside of that room and anyone recording inside. The communication system I set up between inside and outside didn't really work consistently, so I've moved the computer and the interface to a table at one end of the room, the recording room. From there, I can easily direct 3 actors at a time as they record onto separate tracks on Adobe Audition. So that's my setup. As far as issues I've faced, there have been occasional noises from the office next door. That's down to a minimum now, and it really rarely ever affects anything. My Bluebird, which is an incredible mic that is always my go-to if there's only one voice. In fact, I'm using it right now. It started giving me some weird ambient sound that I couldn't figure out. But the company, Blue, had me send it in, and they sent it back as good as new. Now, if you're a novice like I was and just want to stick your toe in the water, you don't have to start out with this kind of setup. You can begin your AD journey with just a USB mic, a computer, and a closet. And I can tell you for sure that I've never regretted adding audio drama to my list of ways that I tell stories. And many thanks to the Audio Drama Production Podcast for virtually holding my hand through these first 2 years.
Well, thank you so much to every single person who's given you an insight there into what they've got and how they use it. And I think that's what's brilliant. Sarah, Tanya has got a whole booth that's set up. And, you know, you can get these kits where you can make things at home and all singing or dancing. And then you've got the basic setup that we recommend from our website, which is, you know, your microphone into a Scarlett 2i2, into some kind of laptop and perhaps some duvet over your head in a cupboard, you know. So I think what's lovely about those representations is there's a good range there. And it was interesting to get, you know, that male-female mix as well, because obviously our voices have different timbres and tones and so on. And so Regan especially, I think, is someone who's very keen. If you'd like to approach any of these folks and ask them anything else about their kit, please do. And to also help you on your way, we have the awesome Audioblocks, which is our sponsor for the show currently. And there is so much choice on there to help you with your music, your loops, your sound effects. There's over 100,000 things you can choose and look through to find something suitable that will hopefully enhance the mood or atmosphere or excitement in your piece. There's a 7-day free trial and it's definitely worth going and have a look. So www.audioblocks.com/ADPP. I don't know if you've seen, but we have got a so exciting script writing competition launching in January that I've just recently launched, and we are asking people for 10, 15 or half an hour scripts for any genre apart from fan fiction. We want to kind of stray from that. I would like just completely original works is what I'm after. And the exciting things about this are, A, we're going to choose some to be performed live over the next year. And I thought it was just going to be in Britain, but no, people are so excited about this that we're talking about having some live shows in America and in Canada currently. So if your country feels left out and would also like to do some of these originally inspired works, please just contact me, because I would absolutely love that. The more we can spread this audio drama fun, then the more happier I think the world can be.
Yes, yes.
And as a result of that also, those that don't perhaps get picked out for the live shows then have the opportunity of being taken on by independent podcasters from the ADPP fold, if you like. So the people we know and love and who've all said, yes, I'd love to take one on. And I've now got about 20 podcast producers, names you'll all know, so you're Pete Lutz and Austin and Steve Cardinal and Travis Vengroff, and oh my goodness, there's so many amazing folks who said, yes, I would love to take one of these on board. So opportunities wise, it's very exciting, and I'm hoping that lots of people jump on that. So do look out on our Facebook group if you haven't seen it. There's a long post with lots of information because we are a small company trying to do this, and so it needs to have everything itemized in that space. So hopefully, yes, jump in, put both feet firmly on the audio drama writing thing and go for it. What do you say, Sarah?
I say yes. Do it.
And how did you get into your writing podcast? What inspired you to talk about what you felt was important about writing?
Oh, man.
So it was basically driven by an enormous failure that I had. So I was living in Chicago at the time, and I was like, I want to start a writer's group because I want a place where I can talk about writing and where I can learn from other writers. And I love that you touched on this earlier. You said, you know, you do this podcast to learn. And you do. I learn by teaching and I learn by being in community with people. So I started this writers group in Chicago downtown, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be amazing. And all these people are going to show up and it's just going to be this cool thing. Nobody showed up. Or like, you know, if people did, it was just like one or two of my friends out of pity, because they were like, well, we'll go show up for Sarah's writer's group. And so so I did this, and I like doggedly kept pushing it for pretty much the entire time that I lived in Chicago. So about a year or two, I was like really pushing this non-existent failed writer's group. And so then later on, when I moved to South Dakota, I was like, I wonder if there's another way that I could encourage writers. And so I was like, all right, I'll do it through a blog. I'll build a community through a blog. And kind of, as I said earlier, the blog thing didn't really take off. And then the podcast did. And so it's kind of come full circle, because now I've sort of built writers groups out of the podcast. And so it was just sort of a longer journey to get to where I wanted to be. But I love it. I'm learning. I'm meeting people. It's great.
Sounds amazing. And a kind of a worldwide writing group rather than just in Chicago. So even better.
Yeah. So even better. You end up with bigger reach. So don't give up, I think is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that your message shines through. And I'd like to just jump, if we can, to our Facebook group. We had a question or two. Nathan Comstock had a question for you. What?
Okay.
You ready? What is the biggest thing you didn't know about audio dramas until you started making one?
What a wonderful question. And I feel like this could be its own like 2-hour long special about all the things I didn't know that I needed to know, that maybe it was good that I didn't know. So I say that because I didn't know, first and foremost, I think, was the amount of time. So I already had one podcast, and the Right Now podcast, which is nonfiction, it's just me talking about writing. It takes me about between 10 and 15 hours a week to produce a 30-minute episode. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, I've got this, you know, so that'll be another 10 to 15 hours a week for a 30-minute audio drama. That'll be super easy. See, and I'm laughing even now, and it hurts. But it ended up, my first audio drama episode, fooling around with getting sounds where I wanted them and getting the voices to sound like I wanted them, getting the timing right for jokes. It took me over 100 hours to edit that first episode of Girl in Space, yeah. Which was just, oh my gosh. But it was worth it. And that's the thing is if I had known ahead of time how much work and time it would take, I probably wouldn't have started it. So I'm actually happy in a way that I didn't know ahead of time how much work, just pure tedious work, it was going to be to get this thing off the ground and going. So that's one thing. The other thing that I learned, and I touched on this a little bit earlier, was just the importance of community. Mm-hmm. I decided going in that I was going to make this on my own, and I was very stubborn about that. And I said, this is going to be just me. I'm going to keep it simple. It's just going to be the girl in space talking to her audio diary and no other characters. That's it. And I showed the script to my husband, who's also a writer. And he's like, Sarah, you need some more characters in here because this is not like really sustainable story-wise. So I invited in some voice actors. I invited in my brother-in-law, John, who directs the voice actors and is just a national treasure. Mm-hmm. And I learned that I can't do it on my own. Mm-hmm. So you can have an audio drama and it can be yours, but it also maybe needs to have some other people's hands in it too. And that was a very humbling but very valuable lesson for me to learn as well.
It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I've been wondering what would be useful to people. And I've been trying to think, well, maybe should we try and offer up an ADPP buddy system of some kind where, you know, people can volunteer to potentially be paired up with someone who's been through at least one episode production and or, you know, a series, just so that there's people who might perhaps want to do that. So I don't know if you're interested in doing that, then yeah, maybe we can start up a discussion on the board somewhere. But that is the thing, isn't it? It's, and I've touched on this before, it's that isolation of things. Because I certainly feel that there's a big change since Fiona has had to go back to her amazing production life. I think it's been, quite a vertical learning curve in other areas for me. And you do end up spending quite a lot of hours with just that audio and you. And,
yes.
And a deadline to meet, you know. And although it's a soft deadline, you know, as I say, it's not something that, you know, life depends on. It is still something you want to hit, don't you, mm-hmm. for professionalism and everything else. And so, yeah, I have found the big pressure. But if I have had a problem, I have said, help.
Yes.
And every single time, not just one person, but quite a few, in fact, tens of people in the past have come and helped with a problem. And I think that is really key. And as Rick Coase said in his interview with us and countless others, reach out, mm-hmm. speak to people, do not be afraid to connect, because I think that is the strength of the audio drama community, that they are a community and will support you if you need it. So
yes.
So yes, that's very key.
Yes, amen. Amen to that. Like, yes, so much.
Okay, and I have question two for you. Are you ready?
Yes.
What is the number one thing you would do differently if you started over today?
Oh my gosh, I have an answer for you. And this was a hard lesson that I think I needed to learn, so it's probably good that I did it this way in the first place. But if I had to start over, I would write the entire season before starting production, before launching my first episode. So episode 5 is out there. Episode 6 is written and it's with my voice actors right now. But I have not started yet writing episode 7. And it's just, you end up like chasing this giant snowball down a hill and it keeps going faster and faster and bigger and bigger and getting away from you more and more. So that is one thing. And you mentioned pulsating earlier with his thousands of words. Like,
yes.
I think he probably learned this lesson early on, too, that it's probably a good idea to be more prepared than you think you need to be when you start out. Because, yes, that was that has been also a very humbling experience, but good.
Yes. Fantastic advice, I think. Yeah, and I think that is something I have heard from quite a few people is, yes, and get it recorded as a season, perhaps, before you then put all of that out. So then it's all done and you're not, as you said, chasing your tail or that snowball.
Yes.
So, yeah, it is about that, yeah, getting everything in place so that then you can focus on your marketing and your, you know, visibility in various forums. Because I feel like out of the newest podcast I've seen coming out, the Amelia Project has done that beautifully mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. And from what I gather, they started just a week or so ago. They're into episode 2 now, and they will be producing one every 2 weeks till March, I think it is. And so how organized is that? How visible is their logo?
Yes.
How visible is their presence? They're wonderful people. You can talk to them. They've given back to the community and also, you know, been there for people's questions. And I just think what a wonderful contributor to the whole podcast community they've been so far. So if you want any kind of model to follow, I do think have a close look at what they're doing right now as well. They're dripping you some more things about
yes.
what's happening next. They're doing live events where they live. They're connecting across the world and going to other people's events and things. So yeah, have a good look, I think, at their model because they've got some great tips, I do feel. And whose help would you like to signal as being paramount to you getting done what you do these days?
Oh my gosh. Mostly to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. People like you, the folks in the Slack mm-hmm. community. And I really want to especially call out Pulsating as well. He has just been an incredible, this is going to sound weird, but enabler. Like he has shown me that that you can do this and encouraged me and said like, yeah, you this is something you can do. So this entire community, though, is so helpful and so warm and welcoming. And I really can't say that enough. I've been so impressed. I've felt so welcome. And I just feel so honored to be a part of it.
Superb. Well, we're very, very hugely glad that you are. You're a huge inspiration. And as I say, you have been to me and absolutely countless others. I'm certain of that.
Well,
so,
thank you.
So keep on writing, keep on doing, keep on being amazing.
Well,
and
you too.
Yes, we do hope to hear of more exciting adventures in your podcast world as well. I'm sure you're not just limited to Girl in Space. I'm sure there's hundreds of thousands of stories burgeoning to come out.
There are.
Shared in the audio format. Yes, exciting. And have you done our winter survey, Sarah?
I will.
So, yes, if you haven't, please jump on the winter survey. We'd love to hear back from you. If you don't tell us what you want, we can't make it. We'll just guess. And then, as I say, it just all comes from my brain, which is probably bad. So, and thanks to Audio Blocks. The Audio Blocks make your life easier with all your sound effects, music and loops in one place and an ever-expanding number of downloadable things of excitement to enhance and improve your wonderful podcast. So please do jump on those.
Please do.
Thank you so much to our other contributors today. Thank you to Steve Blizzen, Regan Adler, Kevin Hartnell, Tanya Milojevic, and the amazing Boyd Barrett. All of you have been so, so kind in giving up your time. And as I said, please do contact them if you want to chat over any of their specific tech details. Superb. Well, enjoy. Have fun. Happy creating. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Sarah. Oh, we did it. We did it. We got through it.
Oh, hallelujahs were meant for moments like this. We beat technology in the end, I think. We can say that. That happened. Write more. Do more. Have fun. Bye.